America and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
So Phil recently came back from his trip of trying to smuggle shoes into the United States. That's a reference to a story we're going to have later, because, yeah, I'm trying to put a fun spin on it, because, let's face it, if you live outside the United States, usually when we start the show, we're like, you know, so some shit went down this week, but let's face it, if you live in anywhere in the world right now, and you've watched international news, I don't have to tell you that shit went down this week, because you know what went down this week.
Yeah.
So this episode is going to be for June 22nd, 2018, and America now has concentration camps for little kids.
Yep.
That's now a thing. The world we live in right now.
Yep. There is no way to fucking sugarcoat that or put some kind of spin on it. That's fucking what it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Republicans are certainly trying.
And holy shit, the fucking backlash is, even in the fucking just hellscape that has been the Trump presidency, is damn near unprecedented. We have gotten international condemnations from just about everywhere in the world. We have gotten condemnations from the Vatican, from, I'm pretty sure, the fucking Dalai Lama has spoken up at least once. We've gotten
even,
it.
Even China is saying, go, that's not cool.
Yeah, China, you know, the place where, you know, that dude recently died for, you know, when he was making a Winnie the Pooh joke about Xi Jinping. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even they're like, yeah, guys, not cool.
Cool it up, yeah.
But there is a good
side.
And the
fact that the Vatican is speaking out about the mistreatment of children at these facilities is, I want to say, ironic, but also very telling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. Furthermore, they've also pointed out that any currently Catholics who are, you know, in communion with the Roman Catholic Church, who are involved in this particular enterprise, are at risk of excommunication.
Hmm.
And like I said, they literally use that word.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's a big fucking deal if you're Catholic.
Yeah.
And, you know, fucking Jeff Sessions' like own church, the church that he's a member of, they've actually,
by the hundreds,
by the hundreds, they have come out in opposition to this and have actually threatened expulsion.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to hit him where it hurts.
Oh yeah,
with his voters. Yep.
Well, with his voters, but also with his church, because I do believe he actually believes what he claims to.
Oh, he does. He absolutely fucking does. And the thing is, this is the one fucking thing I think, and you know, every fucking week I keep thinking, is this the one? Is this the thing that's finally going to fucking sink Trump?
Yeah, that's the...
This is the thing.
We ask that week after week.
No, this is the thing. There's no fucking coming back from this.
It doesn't matter. Even if they completely reverse the policy next week.
Yep. If they reverse it next week and they reunite all 20,000 kids with their
parents.
Which,
unfortunately, is virtually impossible.
Yep. Unfortunately.
And, you know, it's just...
There's no coming back.
No, there is none. You cross that fucking line and you will take that to your grave.
And they deserve it. Fucking horrible, and everybody knows it.
Yeah. I think it was I forgot who it is, one of the guys, the talk show host, he basically said, it doesn't matter if you took that kid away and put in, like, housed them all in one of your hotels. You're still a fucking asshole, dude.
Yep.
But there is one good side to this, and that is, we finally hit a point now where there really is no moral ambiguity anymore. This is just fucking evil.
Yep. And sadly, there are people who are supporting it and all about it being a great thing that they're hurting brown kids.
Fortunately, my parents and most of my family are not part of those people. A lot of my family are diehard Trump supporters, and even they are not happy with this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I kind of wish that they had gotten there a lot earlier, but, you know, it's a start. Because people tend to get kind of pissed when you start taking away nursing children away from their mother's breasts, you know?
You don't
which
kidnap
totally
kids.
Fucking, which, by the way, is totally a fucking thing that has happened. They've done that. So,
and they're like, they're not allowed to touch or comfort these kids.
No.
You guys remember what happened with all those orphanages in Romania, was it, way back when?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. They
Did we mention that some of these, that at least some of these kids were apparently, like, ended up into the clutches of, like, sex traffickers and shit?
Yeah.
So, take comfort in the fact that there is no ambiguity in this. If you oppose this, you are absolutely on the side of righteousness. But obviously that wasn't the only thing that happened this week. Some good things actually did happen this week. Granted, it gets overshadowed by that fucking horrendous abuse against human rights, but some good things did happen, and we will talk about them too. And, of course, you know, we had the other stuff that we were doing this week. And so, to start us off as usual, Phil, what were you up to this week besides, you know, trying to smuggle shoes in and out of the United States?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit. Yeah. In a bit. But, yeah. So I've been neck deep in moving.
Yeah.
We got the key yesterday. We were supposed to be out of here the 29th of June, so next Friday, which is why we're not going to have a show next Friday.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be here.
Yeah. So, also, for the record, even if you were here next Friday, we still wouldn't be having a show because I'm going to be going out of town for the weekend. Yeah, one, my cousin's getting married, so I got to go out of town for the wedding.
Okay. Good to know. So it's been that. Moving stuff to the new apartment. I got a nice new bedroom set in there now. That's going to be quite a little bit of an upgrade over what I've been doing the past few years, so that's gonna be nice. So there's been that going on. I've been listening to a whole bunch of music while I've been doing this, mostly Nino Mega Driver, because he's ridiculous and amazing. If you haven't listened to his video game covers, it's some pretty spectacular stuff. His earlier stuff is a little bit on the rough side, but he's gotten considerably better. They just did a Castlevania album, which probably has one of the best covers of Bloody Tears I've ever heard. So, yeah, check that one out. So there's been that going on. I watched Ready Player One again. It's good. I like it. I picked up on a lot more the second time through than I did the first, because the first time is just, like, overwhelming, and it's, like, all kinds of crap going on. But once you have the general story down, after watching it the first time, you can go through the second time and it's like, oh, so that's what that thing is. And it's like, oh, his password is actually on there in with a post-it note. Like, okay. So there was
As
that.
You do.
Yeah. And you know, that is totally the kind of stuff that does happen. So, yeah. So, yeah, it was a pretty good movie. I'm probably going to pick up the Blu-ray when it comes out. Maybe there's going to be some extended scenes or deleted scenes or whatever in there, so it'd be good for just the extra material alone. As far as the movie went, not really much to say. It's based on Ernest Cline's, pulp novel, basically, because it's not the greatest writing, but it's a lot of fun just going through it anyway, so.
Sometimes you need that.
Yeah. It's definitely a popcorn movie.
Palate cleanser.
Definitely enjoy it. If you get a chance to see it in 3D, do so, because it's a lot better in 3D for one reason.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. Apart from that, basically, I started with Sega Genesis Classics, and then that just turned into Shining Force, and I'm like, that's it. So, I finished Chapter 6 last night. really irritated that I missed two of the rings, which were in chests in the battle that with Michaela. because she's like one of the major bad yep. villains that you'll end up running into, because you know she's like a wizardess and stuff, and basically throws her minions at you because she doesn't want to fight you, and then eventually she has to. Turns out yep. she's pretty tough. The problem with that battle is the chapter ends immediately after. Usually when you finish a battle, you'd have time to go around and grab the chests that you didn't get during that time. Not that battle. I did manage to snag the Sword of Light during that, though, so yeah, at least I remember to get that. Because that you can use immediately, and you kind of need it. Because, yeah, regenerating health on bosses, yeah, not fun. Yeah. So I'm planning on finishing that up this weekend, like finishing Chapter 7 and 8, and then going straight into Shining Force 2, and then CD, and then 3. Yeah, I'm going to go through the whole series if I can.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of been my week. I'm going to have to take a little bit of a break during the week to actually do the moving stuff. But besides that, yeah,
I'll feel that in my soul.
Yeah, so... moving's not really so bad because we have movers, so that's going to be okay.
It's the unpacking that is
death. It's like the 3 months of unpacking afterwards that I'm not looking forward to. So that's kind of been my week. How about you?
Profound digestive distress. I think left over from E3, but it could be there are other possibilities that may have contributed to it. But it's been nagging me all week, and I've been... you know, I've missed a little bit of work because of it, but hopefully I'll be on the mend this weekend and finally get to finish off what's left of this unpacking.
Yeah.
Because I do not want it to be a drawn-out process. Other than that, I am watching the NHL draft as we speak. And not much to tell on it so far. There's been a little bit of player movement, but no... earth-shattering trades to speak of just yet. But I am entertained. It's the weekend. You know, it's NHL draft time, and you know, I just need the break at this point.
Yeah, totally understandable.
So, that's been my week.
All right, and Teresa, what about you?
Well, I've been playing Civilization Revolution 2.
And, how am I not surprised?
Right. Because I can't figure out what else to play. We're at that point. I can think of a lot of things, too. It's just a matter of actually getting the time. And this week, had time issues. Lots and lots of time issues. What else was I doing? I finished up Archer Danger Island. I thought that was a fun little whatever the hell this is that these last couple of seasons are. And I'm looking forward to the next season, which appears to be some sort of space thing. So there you go. And I also am employed again.
Oh, yeah? What are you doing now?
database analysis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thanks. So I have been cramming SQL because it has been 14 years since I've used it. But I'm pretty freaking stoked. It's a really, it seems to be a really good thing. There are a lot of great things about it, not the least being that it is work from home again.
Yeah.
Perfect commute, right?
Yep.
So we'll see how that goes. They're doing the background check and everything, so I will probably be starting, I imagine, shortly after 4th of July. That whole week is kind of crazy. And, you know, I know that I won't have quite as much time for gaming, but, you know, I'll have a lot more money for it. So there's that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it'll be nice to be back in corporate IT again.
All right.
Good money there.
Yeah. Mm. All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I've been watching The Break with Michelle Wolf. Her show on Netflix. And it's pretty good. It's not what I think a lot of people would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
She does talk about politics and that sort of stuff, but not a part of the whole show. But yeah, it's one of the rare Netflix shows that is not like just throw everything up at once. It's a weekly show. So she talks about like the big news. And I think the most recent episode I was watching is the week before or the week of the North Korea summit.
Mm-hmm.
But also she has some other segments. She does like commercial breaks, quote unquote commercial breaks, that are just spoofs of things. The one episode had a product that just keeps your car horn honking the entire time, just on permanently as a way of keeping you safe, because everybody will know you're around. Some real dumb stuff, I think. And then that she just continued to expand on that idea of the rape whistle that just always is blowing, just to keep you, everybody aware of your position and all that sort of stuff. There's one with new types of Alexas, Amazon Echoes sort of things, that eats bologna. It's real dumb stuff, but it's a pretty good show. I also am trying to get back into Naruto Shippuden, because I got lost in the filler at a certain point. So I'm trying to catch up and figure out where I'm at and trying to just watch the non-filler stuff. I got a nice list of all the stuff I should skip, so I'm working my way through it, and I think I'm at the big Jiraiya fight with Pain, I guess. And that's been pretty good, especially not trying to watch all the filler. There's a whole big filler arc leading up to what I was watching now. It still gets real boring for some of it, at least. I also checked out a new YouTube channel called Retro Replay. This one is pretty noteworthy because it is Nolan North and Troy Baker,
mm-hmm.
Two of the biggest male voice actors in the game.
The two biggest, period. Like, I'm pretty sure they've gotten like 50% of all male voice acting collectively in video games.
Yeah, there are a few others, like Roger Craig Smith and some others that do a lot of work as well, but it's those two playing old games. And mm-hmm. It's real good. The first episode is the Spider-Man game on the Atari 2600, which is really bad. And they're trying to figure out how just to get up a building. That's all that is Spider-Man trying to get up the top of a building and having lots of problems. And sort of along the way, they get so frustrated, they just start doing bits of various people that live in this apartment building, noticing that Spider-Man, there's a strange man in tights trying to climb up the building. It's good stuff. They do like an Edith Bunker and Archie kind of bit of, she's like, tell him about the man trying to climb up the building.
Mm-hmm.
I already imagined him not yelling at each other, and it's all good stuff. And they don't do well at most of the games they played so far, but they do get real happy they beat the first boss in Ninja Gaiden.
To be honest, that's, considering it's Ninja Gaiden, that is kind of an accomplishment in and of itself.
Yeah, and the most recent one, Nolan North was talking about having them play a game that he's actually familiar with, which is the Atari 2600 version of Space Invaders.
Yeah.
Which he said he had played a lot. And what I found amusing is that they were playing an emulated version with a DualShock 4, and he wasn't doing that great at it. But then they pulled out the Atari Flashback version of it, the Flashback console thing. And he was kicking ass on it, so much so he just passed it along to Troy, just out of boredom, being so good, because it's just the same thing over and over again.
Mm.
It never really gets any sort of progression. It's just, how long can you last at this? But yeah, done a really good job with that stuff.
Hmm.
And, yeah, so as for games, I've been playing more Fallout Shelter. Just keeping that going on the PS4 and Switch, and jumping back in on my Xbox One version a little bit, as well as now I've got both Switch and PS4 able to do quests and go out to the questing areas, which on the Xbox One is terrible because it has the most screen tearing I've ever seen in a game for a game that should be simple enough to not have those issues, especially on an Xbox One X. But they've never put out any patches on that. On the PS4 and Switch, there's no issues. It looks perfectly fine. Yeah. So it's like, how the hell is a Switch doing running this game better than an Xbox One? But yeah. I've also been playing Rainbow Skies, the new game from East Asia Studios, which I don't think I can say too much about, because I think it's out on Tuesday, so it's still some embargo stuff. But if you played Rainbow Moon, this one is like that, but with some new stuff in it. And so if you like that, you'll probably like this.
Mm.
But yeah, I've been putting some time to it, and I think I'll have some more things to say once the embargo's up.
All right.
But yeah, I also picked up Breath of the Wild from the big E3 Switch sale. I ended up trading in the physical version plus The Witcher 3 Complete Edition to GameStop. They have a special deal going on. It was like get up to 40% bonus if you're trading it towards like an eShop or PSN or Xbox Live card. So I ended up doing an eShop card. And those two games pretty much covered a $50 card. So I ended up getting that paid off in full, so I have a digital version just available at any point to play. Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle just came in a little bit earlier, so I'm looking forward to putting some time into that. And I also picked up The Witcher 3, the digital version, so I can just play that whenever so.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to playing some of these games now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now that we got the summer doldrums, you kind of have to find ways to fill your time.
Yeah, and I played a little bit of Breath of the Wild and beat the second of the whatever the dungeons they have in there.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Meadow?
Yeah.
Big word.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty neat, though. I was also kind of over-prepared for it because I just have, like, several hundred arrows.
Yeah.
So I was just taking on the boss and just firing arrows constantly.
But see, the great thing about that game is that, you know, it gives you different ways of going about all of these challenges, so.
Yeah. Which mine is just fire arrows at it.
Yeah.
Because that takes off most of it does a lot of damage to it.
Mm-hmm.
And arrows are pretty cheap, so I can just keep buying more of them. And, yeah, I kind of wish.
Except bomb arrows.
Yeah.
Those, unfortunately, were my addiction.
Yeah. I got a lot of other types of arrows that I don't use because the regular ones do the job most of the time. But, yeah. The game's still good. So, how about you, Brandon?
All right. So, my primary gaming, as it was last week, is Kingdom Hearts. I got the 1.5 plus 2.5 HD collection. So,
Kingdom Hearts 4?
it's got the complete sort of HD remasters of the first two proper Kingdom Hearts games. It's got Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, the remaster. It's also got Birth by Sleep, 328 by 6 days or whatever it is, recoded, and I think it's got, like, the animations for, like, Dream Drop Distance in there, too. Basically, it's the whole Kingdom Hearts experience that you can get at this point. And basically, it's pretty much I've been mostly playing right now Birth by Sleep because I never got a chance to play that when it originally came out. It's actually pretty unique because it's actually fairly dark compared to your average Kingdom Hearts experience. It's basically broken up into three different storylines and then a final episode that comes after you beat all three of them. I'm currently with the first one, which is Terra, and I'm actually at the last boss of that now. The next one after that is Vin. Then after that is Aqua, which some of you may have heard. She makes a kind of, when we recently had the Kingdom Hearts 3 Frozen trailer, she makes a surprise appearance at the end of that one, and then everybody was like, holy shit, why did she turn heel? And, well, I had, part of the reason I had to get this collection is because I wanted to, you know, sort of re-educate myself on the notoriously convoluted Kingdom Hearts lore, and also find out who this Aqua chick was. So, that's pretty much what I've been doing this week as far as gaming is concerned. Doing the usual of reading and music. Recently, started getting back into Pearl Jam. And,
me too.
Did not, you know, that's one of those bands you surprised. They have not lost their touch at all.
No.
They are still as good now as they were in the early 90s.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, it's fucking Pearl Jam, dude. What can you say? It's amazing shit.
Yeah.
And it's, you know you're old when you start hearing, you know, bands like Pearl Jam and Green Day on the classic rock station.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's good stuff.
That's where we are.
Yeah, that's where we are. I won't start feeling really old until they start playing like fucking Limp Bizkit or something.
Oh, I'm sure those are grocery store pop rock
it's
soundtracks.
I can vouch for that.
Along with like Sugar Ray and all these other 90s songs.
Sugar Ray, I'm actually not surprised.
I've heard Korn on Day, classic rock.
Yeah. Korn, fucking... Who were they? The guys, that stupid outfit that had that song Butterfly.
Oh, fucking...
Can't remember them, Crazy Town. Yeah, fucking Crazy Town. Guys. Those guys were like the epitome of just everything I hated about that part of music. Just all of it. I mean, literally just all of it in one package. But, and then, do you guys remember Film Cow? You know, Jason Steele, Charlie the Unicorn. Am I ringing any bells here?
No, not mine.
Mm-mm.
Are you sure you don't remember Charlie the Unicorn? Charlie! We're going to Candy Mountain, Charlie! You don't? None of this? Fucking hell, that was like classic early YouTube. Fucking peasants. All right, look. The point is, he recently has a, he started... Okay, one thing is he's actually a writer now, and he's got a couple books that I've started reading, and they're actually, like, hysterically funny. But he also has started, like, streaming gaming now, and I get on there sometimes, so it's good stuff. But, really, other than that, Planning the Revolution. Yeah, it's going down. Let's just say after this week, I'm kind of through just sitting back and doing and not doing shit.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure you are not alone in that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not. So, that's pretty much what I've been doing. Anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No, nothing coming to mind.
All right, then. Well, I think it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, amongst other... shit. One of the things that was big news was the summit with North Korea and Kim Jong-un.
That shit show.
Yeah. Wherein we basically did, for the record, stuff that I'm okay with, but we got nothing in return. So, you know, they're ending the military exercises, which, you know, I'm fine with. And, of course, you know, both North and South Korea have kind of been trying to keep Trump at arm's length because they kind of don't want him to fuck this up.
All right.
But, So because of that, you know, North Korea and what North Korea is like has sort of expanded out, you know, and now everybody's like, what is it like in North Korea? What's it like to live in North Korea? How do their politics work? What do people eat? The answer to that last question is very little. And the other questions, it's basically an old school, like, sort of semi-communist regime wherein they have that one big party that rules everything, and then they'll have the couple of ancillary parties that are basically controlled opposition. You know, kind of like, yeah, sort of like what they used to have in East Germany. And
if they were genuine opposition, they would have been assassinated or otherwise.
Or what they actually have in the People's Republic of China right now. Yeah, people don't know that, but there's actually 10 other political parties in the People's Republic of China.
They just have zero power.
Yeah, they constitutionally, the Communist Party always has to be the majority in their Congress. So in North Korea, you know, they've got three political parties. There's, of course, the main one, which is the Workers' Party of Korea. There's the Korean Social Democratic Party, which is a, what it said on a tin, a social democratic party. And then there's the Cheongduist Party, which is part of this, specifically part of a native Korean religious movement that's like a couple hundred years old. But so as sort of like we've been able to get more into North Korea, and North Korea has been kind of, I don't want to necessarily say opening up, but they're sort of not as clingy about, you know, their media and stuff as they used to be. We kind of get a better idea of what modern North Korea is like and sort of how they view the world. And there's one little artifact that we've noted that came out and actually ended recently that we now have been able to now see clearly for everyone to see. Some of it translated in English, a lot of it not. And that would be North Korea's favorite cartoon series, Squirrel and Hedgehog. You may or may not have seen bits and pieces of this on the news or on YouTube, but basically it's an animated series that has existed for over 40 years in North Korea. It's done by an anime... It was done, because like I said, it actually ended this year. But... it's done by a studio called SEK Studio, which is located in Pyongyang. If you ever watch like bits and pieces of this cartoon on YouTube, you might notice that some of the animation looks vaguely familiar. And that's because, you know, they've worked on other, you know, international projects, including, amongst other things, The Legend of the Titanic. You know, one of the animated Titanic musicals.
Yes.
And its sequel, Tentacolino, which is also called In Search of the Titanic. They've also done, let's see, what's some other stuff they've done? They've done stuff with Marvel, with Stan Lee. They did one episode of Avatar The Last Airbender back in 2007. They also worked a bit on The Simpsons movie. And on Bender's Big Score. They also have occasionally done like what are basically Korean ripoff cartoons. You know, the type of stuff that they do because since, you know, they can't allow that evil Western imperialist garbage into their country, they have to somehow placate the children by vaguely similar. One of them being something called Simba the King Lion, which is just balls out insane if you ever get a chance to watch it. But no, we're going to talk about Squirrel and Hedgehog. And Squirrel and Hedgehog is basically a cutesy animal violent war cartoon. And it's never been officially confirmed by either North Korean media or SEK Studios themselves. But if you read between the lines a little bit when you're watching the show, you can kind of get the idea of what's each particular animals are supposed to represent. For example, the two big ones, of course, being the squirrels and the hedgehog. In this show, the squirrels are the leaders. They're the ones who get everything together. There are the hedgehogs, who are the soldiers. And then there are two are the Navy of this particular, because they all live on this place that's like a hill. I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called like Peace Hill or something like that. And then they have their enemies, which include weasels, wolves, and rats. And if you look sort of between the lines, you can kind of sort of see what they're all supposed to represent. So like the squirrels and hedgehogs and ducks are supposed to represent the North Koreans. And it's actually sort of goes into that whole sort of idea of like there being a, I guess you can kind of call it like a caste system within North Korea, where there's like, you know, the intelligentsia and, you know, the workers and the agricultural stuff. It's often believed that the rats are supposed to be representative of South Koreans. There are wolves are pretty clearly supposed to be the United States, because they basically, the clothes they wear are basically almost identical to like U.S. Army drab. And the weasels are meant to represent the Japanese. And the reason people say that is because, well, the weasels, their eyes are relatively slanted and they have fangs. Which, if you've ever looked at old school, like World War II anti-Japanese propaganda, you can kind of see the connection. And probably the one thing, like up until recently, that made this show into kind of a meme was one particular character that was introduced somewhere, I think it was in the 2000s of this show, where the wolves ended up having a new leader named Lieutenant Fox Vixen, who was, let's just say, a little too seductive in her actions for a children's cartoon. Yeah. So you're probably thinking, it's like, okay, so what do they do in this show? You know, there's, well, of course, it's a war cartoon at its essence, even though it's all a bunch of cute cartoony animals. So there's lots of machine guns, lots of, you know, shooting and bombing and weasels getting impaled on the end of spikes. There's bloodshed, not incredibly graphic. Like there isn't like organs and meat everywhere, but it's that kind of like in between sanitized and unsanitized violence that makes it extra creepy. There's also the occasional soccer games, because North Korea, you know. And then there's like, there was that one episode where one of the duck characters, who was like really well loved, basically did a kamikaze bombing into an enemy ship. Because, you know, it's glorious to die for the motherland and everything. Yeah, it's just, it's that weird combination of just propaganda and bizarre.
And yeah, if you think of it in terms of like itchy and scratchy, you're not far off.
Yeah. By the way, did I also mention that there's occasional musical numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're songs. Yeah.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah, so if you ever get a chance, well, if you can find like some of it on YouTube, give it a watch, because it is fucking balls to the walls insanity in animated form. And it also kind of reflects the North Korean mentality pretty well.
Is it subbed?
One episode is, the rest of it isn't, but to completely honest, it's like some anime where you don't really need it to be subbed. You can kind of understand pretty easily what's going on. So, yeah. That squirrel and hedgehog, balls to the walls insanity, straight from Pyongyang and into your heart. And that has been Brandon's random factoid. So, now then, we now have to start the show proper. And of course, we're starting with our asshole of the week. And there was absolutely no competition this week.
Yeah, it kind of already spilled into the top of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The asshole of the week is the Trump administration and their awful migrant child detainment policy.
Hmm.
Yeah, we can also just throw in everybody that supported it. Like,
and everybody.
The Fox News, the GOP.
Members of, well, not just the GOP, but members of the GOP. It has not been a universal
thing.
Many have, but also many have not. That needs to be. I know that sounds like something middling to say because, frankly, it taints the entire Republican Party by its very existence, but that is important. It's not something that they all are okay with.
Yeah.
What?
But yeah, Trump has been basically saying all week, it's the Democrats' fault.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, Obama had this policy, which is not the case. He had one that was about children had gotten separated from their parents at some point while trying to come in.
Not children who were actually with their parents and, you know, getting ripped away from their mothers while nursing. No, it was kids that they couldn't find the adults with. And I think at most it was made up of, like, there was only, like, 15 kids in total during the entire Obama administration they had to do that with. But,
yeah, they only had them until they could find suitable, like, family or whatever that they could take care of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, and for the record, there are parts of this that you can trace back to when Clinton was president. But that's kind of neither here nor there because we've been through, we're now, like, three administrations deep away from that. And, you know, he hasn't been president for, like, almost 20 years now, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, and... Yeah, Trump has basically been gaslighting the whole time, because remember, initially, he's like, there's no policy. We haven't done anything here. And then they're like, okay, we did that, but it's not our policy. It started under Obama. Okay, this is our policy, but it's not bad.
Okay, it looks bad, but we promise you they're not in cages. They're in these little camps, and they got beds and everything.
Okay, they are in cages.
But we only keep them there for at most a few hours, and then we take them off to these camps.
Mm.
Okay, they've been there for days.
Months even for some of them.
It just it just gets progressively worse.
And then he eventually...
Like, at this point, he should probably just keep his mouth shut, period, because if he keeps going, eventually it's going to end up like, yeah, we're kind of lining up kids next to the walls and having them shot.
Yeah,
but at least they're dummy bullets and they don't suffer for very long. Yeah. I know that's a bit of morbid humor, but that's kind of where we are right now.
Yeah, I was making jokes about the, you know, you announced the Space Force.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
These guys are going to be the ones that are going to have to kill the kids. These are going to be the concentration camp.
I always thought he was Darth Vader, so.
It's going to ruin the Space Force before he gets to do anything. But yeah, also... He signed an executive order to stop this.
Which basically means that, no, it doesn't mean it's like, oh, we're going to reunite kids with their parents and then keep them detained inside these giant prisons.
No, it just means that they're going to detain families indefinitely going forward.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do a goddamn thing for the kids who
there's no plans for the kids. That
also, it's only supposed to like last for like 20 days. And then basically they go back to the old shit. So
yeah, I think one of the big issues has been that the people we have at the border, the checkpoints that they're supposed to go through are basically turning them away.
Yeah,
so the
ports where they're the asylum seekers. Yeah, it's saying, you know, like, no, you're supposed to go to the ports where we do the asylum, and
yeah, the legal
they go
way
to the asylum and they go they the legal go. Way and they say no, go away, we're not accepting anybody. So
they find another way in, and they get arrested for not doing it legally. It's like,
yeah,
you're not giving them the legal way.
Exactly.
It's like the people that have already immigrated into the country, it's like, why aren't you a citizen yet? It's like, because a lot of times they're undermining that system.
Yeah. Also, by the way, even if you do come here legally, it takes several years to, like, fully become...
You have to go through a lot of stuff first before you can apply.
Mm-hmm. Also, it costs.
Yeah.
People don't know that, but it actually costs money to become an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, if you watch...
And along the way, Trump has also been slowly trying to change the way he talks about Democrats, like describing them as, you know, vermin, pests, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Affecting this country, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
along with the immigrants as well, in a way that's very Nazi-like.
Yeah. Oh, don't think it's not unintentional, because it definitely is.
No, yeah. There's like, what, 9 steps, and we're at like number 6 now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing is, nobody has fucking just ignored this. People have been making a massive fucking deal about it, which, for the record, is kind of one of the things that Hitler kind of didn't have to worry about, because he had the full power of the state behind him to completely crush his opposition outright. Trump basically has the Constitution going up against him, and the fact that, you know, we have separation of powers, so, you know, he's got a bunch of obstacles going up against him. He basically, the only reason he can get shit done is through the sycophants that basically worship him like a god. So, as you can obviously see, people have not been taking this shit lying down, and no. Nor should they.
No.
And every time that people in the Trump administration complain about somebody hurting their fifis, they're lucky that somebody doesn't hit them in the back of the head with a fucking crowbar.
Yeah. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Fucking Kellyanne Conway going on about, how dare you, sir? How dare you? Bitch, I dare everything.
And had the head of, what, the HHS?
Yeah.
Or was it DHS?
Kirsten Nielsen.
Yeah, she's like, oh, there's no kids, it's all fake.
Yeah, and then we find out. And then the day that, you know, we suddenly realized the extent of this shit, she actually tried to go eat dinner at a fucking Mexican restaurant.
Mm-hmm. And she got...
That is fucking...
Can we point out the... Yeah, could we?
Seriously.
At a Mexican restaurant.
Staffed by Mexican immigrants, might I add. And, of course, she didn't last there long, because as soon as people realized, the local DSA came over and basically chased her out of the fucking restaurant.
Way to go, Metro DC DSA.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Apparently, that's not the... There was another incident that happened earlier. I think it was another restaurant where they didn't even manage to get in. It wasn't Nielsen, it was somebody else. Let's see, people have been speaking up in the fucking, you know, finally, people in the media seem to finally be doing their fucking job at the press pool, because,
took long enough.
Yeah. And, our elected representatives have started doing shit. Recently, Ted Lieu from California, as he was giving his, thing on the Senate floor, he started playing that audio that we all know and hate by now, of the sound of crying children as they're getting torn away from their loved ones and relatives, and, you know, there's that one asshole going, looks like we got a bit of an orchestra, all we need is a conductor, you know, that asshole.
Yeah. And those kids are so tired, too.
Yeah, of course they are. They've been through the fucking desert. Walking for days on end, but...
None of that borderland is pleasant.
Oh, no, it is not. And he would, well, fucking Pat would know. He just played that audio, and, like, the fucking, the person who was, like, doing who was chairing the thing at that day, it was Republican, and unfortunately she was from my state. She was like, you know, can you turn that off now? She's like, he's like, no, fuck you. So she actually had to call the sergeant at arms. To get him to turn it off. I don't know if he was escorted from the building or not, but, you know, then he went on Facebook, I think it was either Facebook or Twitter, and he said, you know, they want to talk about a lack of civility. Well, fuck civility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, to cap it all off and to finally just emphasize how fucking... Oh, before I say that, Stephen Miller's cell phone number got leaked.
I'm sure his phone's been...
Yeah, I did my duty in sharing it.
Yeah, he changed the number, like, within 10 minutes of the news getting out, but...
Yeah, he would have had to.
As well as his pants, I'm sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then finally, and for the record, you've noticed that he's been laying low this week.
Hmm.
Because by all accounts, he's the main, the main architect of this whole policy. And apparently he fucking gets off on it, too. But finally, just to finally just put a cap on just how much of shit human beings they all really are, fucking Corey Lewandowski going on fucking Fox News talking with, you know...
Does it have zero relevance at this point anyway.
But because he's just a horrible person, as the person who was opposite him, we're talking about, you know, he said, okay, so we recently got reports of this 10-year-old girl with Down syndrome who's a migrant who was taken away from her family. And as this guy is saying that, what does fucking Corey Lewandowski do? He goes, wah, wah.
No.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is not remotely okay.
Yeah, that is not okay at all. And he fucking tried to justify it during that. Because as you can imagine, the guy who was opposite him was pretty upset by that. You know, a bunch of how dare yous and all that. And he's like, you know, stop trying to politicize the children. Motherfucker, they're children. You know?
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, we're about maybe one step away from somebody getting up and getting decked at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or shot. Needs to happen.
Mm. Or shot, honestly. Yep.
Yeah. Well, technically, that kind of already happened, but but we... And then he tried, like, the next day to come in, and here's the thing. He was talking with fucking Laura Ingraham, and she actually, like, lobbed a softball at him. You know, she's like, you know, obviously you care about what happens to this little girl and everything. He should have, you know, if he was at least intelligent enough to fucking hide his sociopathy, he would have been like something, yes, of course, he would have said something like, yes, of course, and I, you know, fuck the Democrats for politicizing this and making, you know, a political statement out of a child's tears. But no, he says, you know, I don't know the little girl. And it's like, after that point, it's like, no, just stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that was sort of our human empathy test, and you just fucking failed it.
Yeah. It's like, stop talking now. Go away.
Yeah, he's done.
So...
Every time he goes on a talk show, they should introduce him with his own womp womp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, he basically lost all of his speaking engagements this week after that shit.
Good.
So as far as we know, that's kind of where everything is right now. We don't know where it's going to go from here. Country is kind of in a crisis right now, and we're kind of going to have to, we're going to have to deal with it.
Yep.
Because, oh, and by the way, I just want to say both to Trump and to Trump supporters, because when he did that executive order that he was signing, he was trying to sort of heap praise on himself about quote unquote solving this problem that he fucking started.
Yep.
You know, that's it. That's like, you know, thanking the robber for putting their loot back into the house.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that is just our asshole of the week. And as always, we do have a hero of the week to counteract it. And this week, it was the nation of Canada, who decided legally now to legalize recreational marijuana nationwide.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. This takes effect a little later this year.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It's right around my birthday.
Yeah. October 17th.
Yeah, I think I need to start working on becoming Canadian.
So, obviously, I pretty much give Justin Trudeau a lot of credit here, because he was basically instrumental in bringing that into the political mainstream in Canada.
Yeah.
There
is a caveat that a lot of people aren't talking about.
Yeah, what is that?
In that, even though it is, it will be illegal, you may not be able to actually smoke it in your own building, because landlords have actually started putting clauses in against it.
Yeah.
Shocking.
So,
well,
I mean, no smoking clauses are common everywhere, and I would think that all of them by default would, you know,
yeah, include some kind of drug. It's no smoking, no growing. Well, the growing I can kind of understand, but yeah, because that could kind of mess up at a place if you're not careful. Yeah. But the smoking part is like incredibly hard to enforce in the first place, so a lot of people are just going to ignore that.
Yeah. So I'm guessing there's going to be like a lot of weed bars opening up in Toronto.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of stores that opened up prematurely.
Yeah.
Based on like local laws being put in place to legalize it.
Yeah. So once again, Canada manages to beat us in the progress race.
Well, they're the only the second country that is legalized marijuana nationwide.
Mm. Yep.
I don't know what the other one is.
I think it's Portugal.
I want to say Belize.
I think it was Belize. Yay Canada.
Yep. Can't blame us for that one.
Nope. And I guess Coconut agrees too. Yay Canada! Can you hear him? He's like, yay Canada!
Fuck yeah.
Totally.
All right. Okay, so next up, we've got, of course, we're going to start the show proper, also known as the proper show proper. First, with our first big story of the night, which is a former CIA employee has been charged this week with leaking hacking tools to WikiLeaks all the way back in 2017.
I kind of know this leak.
Yeah, it's a big thing that happened back in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe they found the guy, Joshua Schulte, behind what they call the Vault 7 disclosures in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, over the course of months, they started slowly leaking out the tools and information and such they had with this. He'd also been previously charged with possession of child pornography, so all around great person.
Yeah.
I guess the maximum he can get for these charges is 135 years in prison, so some serious stuff.
Yeah.
It's 10 counts of willfully distributing copyrighted materials. Same charge generally levied against someone who posts movies, TV shows, or music files. I guess WikiLeaks responded to this by retweeting the Vault 7 stuff from last year.
That's some serious shit on their part. Yeah. So I guess because we kind of need to refresh everyone's memory what the Vault 7 stuff actually was.
Yeah, this was the stuff that came out. It had the Eternal Blue malware in there. It had the Samsung smart TV stuff in there. It had a whole bunch of stuff, and ended up a lot of that ended up in WannaCry later on. So, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that's. That's some awful shit right there.
Yeah, sort of tools they use to crack like iPhones and stuff like that when needed.
Yeah, among other things, yeah. So it was an actual CIA employee.
As far as we know, anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also possible he's a scapegoat, but that possibility is infinitesimally small. So,
The other thing is, could have been a whistleblower, but you could have done it at a better place.
He also not have been having child porn, so...
Yeah, that probably would have been better, but...
Hmm. Also not on the list of sound tactics to employ.
Yeah. All right, so next story. This one comes out of Florida, and... Florida. It recently came out this week that the state of Florida had not been doing background checks for gun purchases for about a year now, and the reason was because they lost the password. to the site that they used to... God damn it, just... I mean...
Level of stupidity is just mind-blowing.
It's a fucking comedy of errors is what it is.
Yeah, so this involves the office of one Adam Putnam, who is currently running for governor.
Yeah.
Should tank him, but who knows what the hell.
It's Florida, so...
Yeah, so this they didn't necessarily stop doing background checks for a year, but one of the sources they use for these checks, they were not able to log into the system for about a year.
Yep.
And they found this out, let's see. Yeah, so this started about February 2016. They stopped using the results from an FBI crime database called the National Instant Criminal Background Check System that ensures applicants who want to carry a gun do not have a disqualifying history in other states. Yeah, the employee in charge of this background checks could not log into the system. The problem went unresolved until discovered by another worker in March 2017. So for just over a year, applications got approved without the required background check. During that time, which coincided with June 12, 2016, shooting at Pulse nightclub that left 50 dead, states saw an unprecedented spike in applications for concealed weapon permits. So there were about 134,000 requests for permits in the fiscal year ending in June 2015. The next 12 months had about 245,000, which broke a record. And that was topped again in 2017 by 275,000 applications. So that's a lot. And yeah, so if you don't know about Adam Putnam, he made it one of his priorities to speed up the issuing of these concealed weapon permits. And yeah, so see, he held a news conference in 2012. Celebrate the state's 1 millionth permit. Noting the time it took to process an application fell from 12 weeks to 35 days. And there are now 1.8 million concealed weapon permit holders in Florida. But yeah, so he's running for governor now. And one of his things that he is sort of bragging about as part of his campaign is this expansion of concealed carry permits. He's also put out tweets like, the liberal media recently called me a sellout to the NRA. I'm a proud hashtag NRA sellout. Sign below if you are too. So, hey.
Wow, that backfired.
Sold out. Made it so lots of people that should not, potentially should not, so.
Thanks for the confirmation.
So the part of this, I say here, upon discovery of this former employee's negligence, not conducting the further review required on 365 applications, we immediately completed full background checks on those 365 applications. They're just going for like the last 365, which resulted in 291 revocations. 81% of the most recent applications that were approved
shouldn't have
were
been.
Bad. Yeah. The former employee was both deceitful and negligent. We immediately launched an investigation and implemented safeguards to ensure this never happens again. Like, you have more than one person has access to this database.
Yeah.
I think it also mentions here that there is somebody else. There's one other employee that who regularly accessed the database during this time. It's a mailroom supervisor who was barely trained in the system. So, yeah.
Taking things really seriously over there.
Yeah. So on April 7th, 2016, 40 days after records show the department stopped using the database, the woman here, Lisa Wild, reported to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement that her login to the background check system wasn't working. But the investigation said she didn't follow up after she continued to experience problems and never accessed the system again. In March of 2017, another employee wondered why the department had not recently received any notices of denials, which was unusual. The employee reached out to FDLE, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, which handles appeals for denials. They said they had not received an appeal from a concealed weapon applicant since September 2016, setting off alarm bells. So they don't know why it took so long for anybody to notice this. But yeah, they did not have a backup system to ensure the task was completed. And so, yeah. She said the licensing department was overwhelmed with the number of applications. She was under pressure from supervisors to quickly approve applications. Which, yeah, it's not good. No, you need to do the full background checks on these people.
Yeah. That's kind of part of your job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah, this... definitely read this whole thing and then be like, why the fuck are these idiots in charge of this shit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wonderful. So, well.
Yeah, so it's not a Florida man story. It's a...
Florida. Story.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, all right. So our next story concerns Theranos. If you don't know what Theranos is, they're a medical company that's involved in doing blood work and blood transfusions, that kind of thing. They're a pharma company, basically.
Is this and, the one where that chick didn't fall? That woman that is just bad?
Yeah.
Elizabeth Holmes.
Yeah, they were going to revolutionize blood testing.
Yeah, and then it turned out that it was a load of shit.
Yeah, basically.
She has now been charged. The founder and COO, Elizabeth Holmes, has now stepped down from Theranos after she was charged with defrauding millions from investors via wire fraud. So,
yep. Yeah, so she has, let's see, 2 counts of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and 9 counts of wire fraud.
Hmm. Wow.
If convicted, they each face a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison and a fine of $250,000, plus restitution for each count of wire fraud and each conspiracy count.
I'm sorry,
so
that
potentially
seem
life
right.
in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it could be life in prison, but you know it's not going to be.
No. But yeah. So she and her, the president Ramesh Balwani,
mm-hmm.
Are accused of knowingly misrepresenting the capabilities of Theranos' proprietary blood testing technology. They knew there were accuracy and reliability problems, that it could not compete with existing, more conventional machines. And yeah, so they, both of them stepped down.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so they are in a load of shit.
Yeah, this company is basically finished.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they are in shit.
Valued at $9 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not worth nearly that much at this point.
Yeah,
their tech doesn't really work.
Yeah. For the record, on the subject of, you know, the medical business and, you know, defrauding people and just in general awful shit that part of the economy does, mm-hmm. If you got Netflix, go on a series called Dirty Money, a documentary mm-hmm. series they've got there. They did a whole one based around a company that was... Basically, like, it opens up with the story of Pharma Douche.
Hmm.
You know?
No, we remember
Martin
him.
Martin Shkreli, yeah.
Martin Shkreli. And what the series reveals, that, well, not the whole series, this one episode, it talks about a multinational called Valiant, which is a, you know, based in, actually based in Canada. It is based in Canada now. It didn't used to be. Once they discovered that the guy who was the head of it, J. Michael Pearson, apparently had been fucking like he basically had been doing the exact same thing that Shkreli had been doing for that one medication, but across a wide spectrum.
Yeah.
He also had really shady accounting tactics, and of course he was also doing a lot of shady shit to try and avoid the, you know, the corporate taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get a chance, take a look. The episode is called, let's see, it's called Drug Short. Yeah, it's the third one, and let's just say you will walk away really fucking hating Big Pharma after it's done.
Yeah.
Because apparently the stuff that Valiant did is apparently not that unusual.
Hmm.
Do you want to hear about some of the investors in Theranos?
Yeah, go ahead.
I got some notable ones here. Oracle founder Larry Ellison.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
asshole.
Venture capital firm Draper Fisher Jurvetson. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos.
Yeah.
And media mogul Rupert Murdoch.
Asshole.
Yep.
They got classy investors.
Assholes, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, okay. Then you know what? I'm glad she took her took their money.
Yeah. Now I don't feel so bad.
Yeah. No, it's still jerky. Her whole thing was she like idolized Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where she was wearing jeans and black turtlenecks and
God.
Working her, trying to create that whole reality distortion field around herself.
Yeah.
When she spoke in public, she actually like pitched her voice lower so she would sound more resonant.
Yeah.
I can't make this shit up.
God. No, I know you aren't.
So, yeah. Class act all around.
Yeah.
Woo is woo.
Yeah.
All right. So our next story is something we've already sort of referred to twice here, and just appropriate that we actually got this article from footwearnews.com.
What?
I found at least two articles from them about this topic.
Yeah. So as we all know, of course, there's the tariffs that President Trump recently has installed.
I like this. They got tags for President Donald Trump. They apparently wrote enough articles about him. Okay, yeah, there is a bunch here.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, Lord. But
they're writing hard-hitting news about Trump.
Yeah, but basically, as you know, there's all the tariffs, and they're basically tariffs against Canada, against China, against many countries in the European Union, et cetera, et cetera. And while he was, you know, trying to talk about, you know, his approval numbers and, you know, the recent immigration laws and stuff, he brought up the suggestion that Canadians were illegally moving U.S. goods, particularly shoes, across the border into Canada in order to avoid tariffs. In fact, he says that they wear them, scuff them up to make them sound old, look old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's some crazy old people shit.
Mm-hmm.
They're just buying all our shoes, taking them back in because they don't got shoes. You just wear Maple Leafs as shoes, right, Phil?
No.
You don't? What?
No.
You don't come to the U.S. to get your shoes?
Nope. It's kind of interesting in that there actually is a kernel of truth to this. Yeah, cross-border shopping actually is a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At least it used to be till Trump decided to get in the way. Now, yeah, just going across the border has become a huge pain in the ass. Most people don't bother.
Yeah. Yeah, there's also that sort of stuff here as well, where there are states where they have, like, tax-free day. So people literally go on road trips to go buy all their stuff there. And it's like, okay, you spend tons of money on gas to go save whatever minimum amount on tax. You can.
If you're coming down out of Quebec here, you end up in Plattsburgh. So easy place to go to shop. Or if you're in parts of Ontario, you end up down in Michigan. So it's not that far.
Basically, Ontario and Michigan are pretty much just the same place.
Yeah,
mostly.
Like they're so connected that they pretty much bled over into each other. I really don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, as to the whole buying shoes across the border and actually wearing them back up, yeah, that has happened. It's not I doubt it's big, you know, it's a big occurrence, because with the way our money is right now, it's not really worth it. So.
No, pretty sure But what is like the exchange rate between the American and Canadian dollar?
One U.S. dollar is 75 cents Canadian.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Roughly.
So it doesn't really
make much sense.
No, it doesn't. So yeah, that's just a little bite of insanity.
One more thing that Trump did this week.
Yeah. Kind of doesn't really compare to the other stuff, but whatever.
No.
All right, so this next story is just freaking bonkers. And for the record, we need to point this out because, unfortunately, a lot of places have not. Burger King Russia is not owned by the main Burger King company. We need to point that out.
Okay.
Yeah, they're owned by, I think they're called BK Roos, which is actually like an independent franchise. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they supposedly were going to have this contest, Burger King Russia, asking women to sleep with World Cup athletes.
Yeah. Yeah, so they posted a promotion. Let's see, I guess this was Tuesday morning. Promising a reward of 3 million rubles, it's about $47,000,
mm-hmm.
and a lifetime supply of Whoppers for any Russian woman who got pregnant with the child of a World Cup player.
What is wrong with people?
Yeah, this isn't the first time they've gotten in trouble either, because I don't know how many people remember
stupid stuff like this before.
Well, I mean, this is what happens when Moscow has been drunk all the way out of beer. Did you hear about that one?
Yeah. Go ahead.
The supplies are dry. There is very little beer to be had in Moscow right now because of the World Cup, and so they got to figure out something else to do.
Yeah, it's called vodka.
Right.
Yeah, they got plenty of that there.
Pretty sure it's just in the lakes and rivers. It's just vodka. But
yeah, the whole point of this promotion is trying to get the best football genes for the Russian national team in the generations ahead.
Yeah. By the way, this isn't the first time they've gotten in trouble for doing some really stupid shit. I think it was last year they got in trouble when people discovered that on one of their advertisements for like a buy one, get one free type of deal, they had apparently gotten some clip art that was basically identical to a woman on a talk show who, a 17-year-old woman from a talk show who was... Basically, you know, she had her eyes barred out because she was talking about having experienced gang rape.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow she became a piece of clip art and it ended up on that advertisement.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Literally the same hair, the same outfit, even the same hand gesture that she was making. Mm.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Classy company.
Oh, but it gets so much worse because, as you can guess, people were kind of like, dude, Burger King Russia, this isn't cool. Yeah. But then the head of their ministry for marriage, women, and children basically came forth and she said that her big opposition with this was because it was trying to impregnate Russians with foreign babies. Yeah, so they had to bring racism into it.
Boy.
She even made the I'm not racist but still statement. Ugh. Like,
bitch, you racist.
I would think that maybe your opposition to this might be something a little bit more, you know, common sense, but apparently not.
Yeah.
Boy. Yeah, well, different countries, different cultures, I guess. But I think this just transcends cultural sleaziness.
Yeah, it kind of does. All right. Well, our next story is, Foxconn USA. They're setting up shop in Milwaukee.
We'll get around Terrace.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what they're going to be building there.
iPhones? Probably.
I don't know. I think they're going to start with TVs and stuff there for that particular plant.
Yeah, but the reason they decided to do Milwaukee is because the state offered them like $3 billion in tax breaks over the next 5 years.
Walker.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is this might actually end up backfiring for Milwaukee. Because once that money runs out, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm. They're going to move.
Yeah. And what happens to all those jobs that got created? Well, they're gone.
Yep.
Great job there. Foxconn. Milwaukee.
Mm. Foxconn is the same. It was didn't the the Foxconn were the factories in China where they had to install nets near the windows to keep people from jumping to their deaths.
Yep.
Same one.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So, next up, did you know that there are publicly available flamethrowers now?
Yes.
Yeah, they come from the Boring Company. And this week we kind of realized why that's really not a good idea.
This is why we can't have nice things.
And when we say, like, flamethrowers, we mean legit, like, almost...
Shoot a 3-foot flame out the front, flamethrowers.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Like military grade.
Yeah, not quite that much, but still.
Well, I mean, they don't have the giant tank, backpack tanks, but...
Yeah.
Same capabilities, basically. And, Oh, just how could this go wrong? Let us count the ways. By the way, if you look at this thing physically, it looks like... I'm guessing somebody is a big Mass Effect fan, because this looks like the assault rifle from Mass Effect 3. But
yeah. It looks like a Super Soaker.
Oh, yeah. By the way, this is one of Elon Musk's companies, so...
Kind of related to this, but and we don't have it on the notes, but I'll just bring it up briefly anyway, the Boring Company in about 3 or 4 months is going to bore a hole from downtown Chicago to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get to the airport faster.
Yeah.
Well, they think they are.
Yeah.
Are they going to do it right into the airport?
Yeah. Well, it's going to have the... Bore a tube down through there, and you're gonna drive up. It's gonna lower you down underground and shoot you all the way over to the airport. And yeah, that's gonna happen.
Nah, they can't do that with vehicles. Are they fucking nuts?
Oh, by the way, did we mention that this thing is called, and I'm quoting, not a flamethrower? Like, that's literally its name, not a flamethrower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had to do that because they couldn't ship flamethrowers.
Yeah.
So they had to call it not a flamethrower.
Apparently there's like a whole, like, in order to order one of these things, there's like a whole user's agreement that you got to go through, and it's just freaking...
Yeah.
It is, it's...
And this article is full of user agreement violations.
Yeah.
Right.
It says such things as, I will not use this in a house. I will not point this at my spouse. I will not make this in an unsafe way. The best use is for creme brulee.
And that is also a rhyming ability.
Yeah.
Yep.
I understand the Boring Company isn't responsible for anything I do, no matter how genius or stupid.
This includes...
arming others, setting things on fire, burning things to the ground... Just
smoking near the not a flamethrower, putting anything flammable near the not a flamethrower, showing off to my friends or romantic interests.
Also, whose idea was it to use this thing next to a baby carriage?
What? Excuse me?
There's a photo.
Oh my god.
Luckily, I don't think there was any baby in the carriage at the time. Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
And yeah, people are already setting things on fire they really shouldn't. There is, of course, one picture of one guy who's using it to make creme brulee, which actually
probably
is.
Didn't show that well, Eddie.
It's one of the things they actually do recommend using it for. But there's people, basically videos of them accidentally setting crap on fire. It would be funny if it wasn't potentially lethal.
Wow.
Yeah. It would also be funny if it wasn't $500.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is. It's $500.
Yeah.
They do
have some nice funny tweets here. Somebody wrote, Elon Musk gave white people flamethrowers. I'm never leaving my house again. Another one, it's dumb that thousands of weird dorks bought an unregulated flamethrower from Elon Musk, but on the bright side, you gotta imagine at least a few will accidentally burn their dicks off.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, what I also just realized is that, I don't know if you guys know this, but you know the a-holes who did that Unite the Right Valley and rally in Charlottesville?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're planning another one on the anniversary of that this year.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping the cops are on the lookout for these flamethrowers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because, that could go very, very badly very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so next up, and if you want to just see something that just looks amazing, astronomers with one of their, their satellite telescopes, they actually managed to capture images of a star that is being torn apart and devoured by a black hole.
That's crazy looking.
Brutal.
Yep. So they have some shots here that are just artist renditions. There's an actual GIF later down that shows like what they actually see.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually pretty cool. This happened over the course of 10 years.
Yeah.
And interesting stat I saw on, I think, a different article, but essentially the energy being output by this whole thing that was happening is about 125 billion times what our sun puts out.
Yep. So, yeah, with some of those really interesting images you're looking at, they're like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Those are actually artistic renditions. Yeah. So, and this is to be fair, if we actually did have a photograph, that's about as close to the real thing as you'd actually get.
Yeah.
So, also remember, black holes capture light. So, even if they could get that close,
they wouldn't see much.
That's pretty... pretty much it. So, basically, that's the best you're going to get.
Still really cool.
Oh, yes, it is. It's kind of like it poked a hole in the middle of it, and now it's spewing out of its star guts. Just... yeah. Damn, universe, you scary. All right. So, now we got some paleontology news. We recently discovered a new creature from 500 million years ago, which... it's a sea creature. I'm guessing this is this around the Cambrian age?
Let me see. I'm not sure if they mention exactly what age it is.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's some kind of weird sea creature, which is the reason why I suggested it was from the Cambrian age, because that's basically what the Cambrian age was. It was nothing but a bunch of weird sea creatures and plants.
Yeah.
That defy all knowledge of what an organic creature should look like. And they decided to name it after President Obama.
Yep. Obamas Coronatus.
Mm-hmm. Obamas Coronatus.
Coronatus is Latin for crowned.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a tiny disc-shaped animal about half an inch long. Raised spiral grooves on its surface, and spent its entire life embedded on the ocean floor, likely never moving. They also found a second one. It's egg-shaped that looks like a raisin.
Mm-hmm.
It's given the name Attenborites genae, named after Sir David Attenborough.
Mm-hmm.
Genae is a nod to Jane Farger, co-owner of the property where the fossils were discovered.
Yeah.
And these are among the earliest animals to exist on Earth.
Yeah.
And these are found in a well-preserved fossil bed in southern Australia mountain range.
Yeah. Again, that's kind of why I suggested the Cambrian age, because if it's one of the earliest things to exist on Earth, it's going to be in that particular time frame.
Yeah, and so the researchers dubbed this fossil bed Alice's Restaurant Bed.
Yep.
Named after the Arlo Guthrie song.
Yeah. You can eat anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Yeah, that song.
Yeah.
So, once again, just stuff used to be really weird looking millions of years ago.
Yeah.
Of course, more weird
shit from
Australia.
And some of it survived.
If you ever get a chance, if any of your like local natural history museums or something do an exhibit on the Cambrian age, go and check it out, because it will straight blow your mind on just all the weird forms that organic life can take.
Yeah.
Because during that age, there was a point where it was really difficult to separate animals and plants, because a lot of them were kind of both at the same time. So, moving on from there, we got a hockey story. So,
Baseball?
Baseball.
Oh, it's baseball. Okay. Sorry. Like I said, I don't do sporty ball. let's see, we're going to have to sort of read over this one. Washington Nationals, he's a guy named Juan Soto, who's a rookie player for the Washington Nationals, crushed a tie-breaking pinch hit two-run homer against the New York Yankees in the continuation of a game that started May 15th, 5 days before his big league debut.
Yeah, so this probably requires a little bit of explanation. So
yes, it does.
These games, there's like two games, I think, here that got delayed due to rain.
Yeah.
It did not get past the, I think it's the fifth inning. Mm-hmm. Games have to get past or else it's declared, they have to find another day to sort of finish it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if it's after the fifth, it is, they can just call it because of rain, say, you know, the game's done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they were not able to finish this game until earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up, and the way that goes down in the rule book or whatever, is that this game technically takes place on May 15th, even if the game is completed, you know, 2 months later. And so Juan Soto obviously is a rookie who got called up shortly after this game was supposed to take place. Hit a home run. And technically, he hit a home run in a game that happened before he was a professional athlete.
Yeah.
It's technically his first home run, but it does not count that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's sort of a crazy thing that just happens because of this, the way this whole game got delayed.
Yeah. So that's
some weird space-time distortion thing going on.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's technically in the minors at this point, but he had a home run in the majors.
Yeah. Well, it on the bright side, it's a hell of a way to start off a career, so.
Yeah.
All right, so next up, and this story I guess we've all kind of seen, could have kind of seen coming. As you don't know, MoviePass has kind of been eating AMC's lunch. And so AMC have basically stated, you know what, screw you. And they've started their own competitor to MoviePass. They're calling it AMC Premier A-List.
Yeah, Premier A-List.
Premier A-List. Premier A-List. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Like A-List movies, I guess. But yeah, it's similar to MoviePass, but it's different in a number of ways. It's $20 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Allows subscribers to see 3 movies a week in AMC theaters, which seems like it's a little bit worse than MoviePass's 1 per day.
Mm-hmm.
But you will be able to see the same movie multiple times, which MoviePass does not. The weird thing with MoviePass is it was ultimately, like early on, was like really cheap, like $80 a year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of these, allowed you to see like the same movie multiple times a day, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They've slowly added on new rules to limit it and make it kind of worse and worse.
Mm.
But yeah, you can even watch your 3 weekly movies in 1 day as long as there is a 2-hour gap between show times.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So let's see, you need an ID to match a subscription card, and tickets will have your name on them to prevent additional misuse. So you can't actually get this and then, like, oh, you let your friends get tickets or whatever for different things on their own, that sort of stuff. But yeah, you can do this online or on the phone app. Mm-hmm. And it also includes IMAX, 3D, and Dolby Cinema screenings.
Yeah, which MoviePass doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's see. In addition to 3 movie tickets per week, you get all the perks normally associated with the AMC Premier card, which is $15 per year. You get $5 for every $50 spent. Online ticketing fees waived, and you can upgrade popcorn and fountain drink sizes for free. They'll skip the line at the box office concession counter. And they list the other stuff you get for the A-List stuff. And so you can use it all AMC Dine-In and their classic theaters.
Mm.
Let's see. Yeah, it includes other premium offerings, as well as Real D, 3D, Prime, and Big D. I don't know what all that is. Yeah, you can book tickets online. You can reserve seating, all that stuff. Get the VIP stuff.
Do you have
stuff.
AMC theaters near you?
I probably have one. But the one I go to all the time is... What's the other movie theater company?
Was it Regal Cinemas?
Yeah, those are the ones I have near me that I go to.
Yeah.
Cinemark.
Yeah. I think that's also the one I've got next to me as well. So that's about... So I don't think I've got one near me.
Yeah, I want to say there's one somewhere. I think I see it occasionally if I'm going on like a long distance trip on the highways, but the ones I got near me are Regal and Cinemark.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Man, this sounds really cool.
Mm-hmm.
For a specific set of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because MoviePass is basically changing their business model on a weekly basis. So
yeah.
Yeah. If somebody wants something a bit more stable and they actually want to be able to go to the big blockbusters on a subscription basis, yeah, this probably makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. And they have to have AMCs nearby. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have like an AMC as your like local theater, it seems like a really good deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the movie theater business is in this weird kind of limbo right now because a lot of people are watching, you know, the movies at home, you know, on streaming services. But at the same time, there's still plenty of people who go out to the theaters. Yeah. So it's in this weird business. It's in this weird limbo where it's essentially a dying business, but it's still doing really well.
Yeah, they're finding new ways of doing things. Like, you know, probably you could remember your theaters when they were stocked up like airplanes, where it's like, oh, just get as many seats in there.
Oh yeah,
if it's not comfortable at all. Little leg room. Now they've. My Regal Cinema now has like all the reclining seats, so lots of like room, all that sort of stuff, just to make the experience more comfortable, I guess.
Yeah. Fortunately, also fortunately, where I live, movie tickets are relatively cheap. They're like $7. So
yeah, if I go on the matinee showing, it's like 6:30 here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. I honestly don't think. Do you think that it's possible that like movie theaters will completely disappear, or will they just remain but like a niche thing?
I think they'll stick around, but they're gonna evolve.
Yeah, probably.
There's lots of like boutique ones that, you know, it's like part restaurant.
Yeah,
Where you can like order food or drinks in, and that's also part of the experience. Mm-hmm. That gets you spending more money as well.
Yeah, that's true. Well.
I don't buy any concession stuff.
No, I don't either.
So I'm like, I can, you know, have snacks later. I don't have to sit here and eat during a movie.
Plus, I mean, let's face it, who can afford it? The freaking concessions are expensive as hell.
I think that's where they make most of the money.
It's like double the cost of the movie tickets to get a drink.
Sometimes triple.
Yeah.
But, so next up, we're continuing talking about movies. The film Gotti came out this week. It's of course a biographical film about the life of the notorious mobster John Gotti. It's garbage.
This movie?
Who?
MoviePass.
Yes.
They're in the movie funding.
And they just had a swing and a miss too, because this movie is garbage.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it is garbage.
It did $2 million in its opening weekend, and I want to say 40% of that was MoviePass people.
Yeah, and that doesn't even count the quality of the movie, which is poorly acted, poorly written.
They have a 0% Rotten Tomatoes score.
For the critical score. Yeah. And, so the movie is just shit. But then people noticed, if you go on Rotten Tomatoes, which I will, just for the record, I will say, I do kind of have a problem with the idea of like one or two websites having such a major impact on whether or not a film does well at the box office.
Yeah.
In many cases.
It's also a case of a lot of people just misusing those scores.
Yeah, but
Rotten Tomatoes doesn't mean like 0%, like nobody, there's like no redeeming values. Like none of the people that reviewed it liked it.
Yeah. Now, first of all, you should, and this isn't always universally the case, but usually you know there's trouble ahead when they don't screen the movie early for critics, which is what they did here. And then people went and saw it, and oh my God, it's shit. So
people didn't see it.
Yeah. And so the critics basically lambasted it. There's no tension to it whatsoever. It's, you know, the writing's bad, the acting's bad, the cinematography is mediocre at best. But people notice that, okay, so the critical part of Rotten Tomatoes is really low because, like we said, all the critics hated it. But then people notice that the like regular, like the moviegoer part where they give their ratings was like really high. It was like 80%. And so people started wondering, like, what in the world's going on? You know, what? How is it that so many critics could think this movie was so terrible, and yet at the same time, so many people would love it? Now, I'm not saying that that hasn't always been the case in reality, because there's movies that, you know, when they first came out, critics hated, and now they're considered modern classics. But people started to bring up the ideas like, maybe, you know, the producers are like gaming the system. Like
astroturfing,
artificially inflating the numbers. And once people started calling out on them, the producers and the promoters decided to go the Donald Trump route. And they've basically called it fake news.
Yeah, they've basically been using promotional lines like, audiences love Gotti, but critics don't want you to see it. Question is why. Who would you trust more, yourself or a troll behind a keyboard? Calling the critics trolls. It's like, really?
Definitely not the person who wrote that ad.
Nope. Yeah, if it was Armin White, maybe I'd give you the time of day, but...
Yeah, and it's just shitting on the people that are there to do a service for movie-going public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still haven't had a chance. You guys know Brad Jones, right? You know, the cinema snob?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know he has that show on his channel, what they call midnight screenings, where they go to the late night premieres of movies, and then they'll talk about it in the car afterwards. He's got the one for Gotti he put up just yesterday. I still haven't had a chance to see it, but oh man, I can't wait to watch it. Because when it's a movie this bad, it's just classic viewing you're going to see.
It makes me wonder, though, if MoviePass were the ones that funded this. I'm wondering if they're the ones who are actually promoting it. And if that's the case, then, yeah, it's not a good look for them.
All right. Well,
they could also just be putting the pressure on the studio that made this. Hey, we need to make the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, could be.
All right, well, either way. Anyway, next up, MTV. Did you know MTV used to play music videos?
Yeah, I remember it well.
Yeah, me too.
Except we had much music up here.
You guys had much music, which, I'll be honest, much music managed to hold out longer than MTV did. And you guys managed to keep the sort of DIY aesthetic going for a long time, but...
Yeah, that's because it had no budget.
Yeah. He's not kidding.
Also another one that's like Fuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's not. We got that for a while.
Yeah. Bill's not kidding either. I used to watch Much Music back in the early 2000s, and it was like the whole thing was shot at like this warehouse somewhere.
Yeah.
And occasionally there was that sock puppet with the cigar and the green hair.
Yeah.
And, I forgot who he was called.
Yeah, forgot too.
Yeah, but...
Good times.
Anyway, so MTV is going to launch a new adventure. They're calling it MTV Studios. And basically they're going back and they're going to start rebooting some of their old classic properties that they used to have. So Daria...
Daria, The Real World... Maid?
Mm.
Yeah.
And I guess they also announced Aeon Flux is also going to be part of this as well.
Okay, well, there's two
behind that.
Two out of four things I am actually interested in.
Yeah. The Real World could stay buried for all I care.
The Real World is basically responsible for reality television as we know it.
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah, and responsible for some fairly prominent figures in pop culture today. Like, there's a wrestler named The Miz, Mike Mizanin.
Mm-hmm.
He started on The Real World.
Yep.
One of their very series. I thought it was interesting, the Daria part of this. They have information here. It's going to be called Daria and Jody.
Mm-hmm.
Hails from writer Grace Edwards, who did the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt inside Amy Schumer. So seems like a pretty good fit for that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. It's told through the eyes of Daria and one of her close friends, Jody. follows both as they take on the world with their signature satirical voice, while deconstructing pop culture, social classes, gender, and race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, that show fits very well in a modern aesthetic.
Oh, if any show these days that could still be relevant, it's Daria.
Yeah, we've been watching through it again. And, you know, other than things that were only in the 90s, it's
weirdly still relevant in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yep.
It hits home.
Yeah, and let's see. Seems like the Aeon Flux reboot is going to be led by Teen Wolf's Jeb Davis.
Mm-hmm. Are they going to be getting the original creator back on it in some way?
There's not much information here on that. I think it's mainly focused on Daria.
All right. So,
and there's an interview as well with, let's see, the guy that's running this new studio for them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more here if you want to read it, but...
Yeah. Curious, Aeon Flux was created by Peter Chung. He also did a lot of work on the Rugrats, which, if you've ever watched Aeon Flux and the Rugrats back-to-back, you can kind of see it.
Yeah.
They basically have the same kind of animation style. Hmm. At least the early ones did.
Yeah.
Also, I'm just going to be honest here. The Aeon Flux TV series had some interesting concepts, but the voice acting was shit.
Yes.
Oh my god, it was shit.
it was bad.
But,
like I said, that show also probably didn't have a huge budget back then.
No, it didn't. So. I mean, the whole thing literally was spun off of Liquid Television. So,
yeah.
Speaking of which, something that MTV should bring back.
Mm.
But, All right, so, next up, we're getting rumors of a new Star Trek series. And the reason people are caring is because, apparently, according to the rumors, this new series is going to star none other than Patrick Stewart as Captain Picard. Or at the very least, Jean-Luc Picard, whether or not he's still going to be captain or not.
Yeah.
And this is weird. So they re-signed a deal with Alex Kurtzman at CBS to bring him back. He's created a bunch of shows for them. Chief among them is Star Trek Discovery. Let's see. He's also taken over for a showrunner on CBS All Access. So a bunch of their digital stuff there. And yeah, so part of this is some new Star Trek stuff they're looking at, one being a new series featuring Patrick Stewart, Captain Jean-Luc Picard. That's part of that. They're also looking, and they're saying it's still early, so that's nothing confirmed for that series. But so they also have some other Star Trek stuff. I think they're potentially in the work, like animated shows and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would be curious what direction they go with this, because you couldn't really do it as a TNG spinoff, because then you'd need the rest of the cast.
Yeah.
And
also, he is so, quite a bit older since then.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I think he's into his 80s now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting there. So you can't really do a prequel, because he's too old.
Yeah.
You could probably play the time travel angle. Where he is goes back into another Enterprise time, but I think they've done that already.
You do J.J. Abrams sort of thing where you have a new Picard and all that, and
Picard Prime.
Yeah, and he is sort of the guy that just happens to come back, and maybe trains him a little bit or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very difficult to figure out where you could possibly go with that.
Yeah, they're going to have to figure something out.
Especially when they specifically call out Jean-Luc Picard, because, he's a very well-liked character.
Mm-hmm. All right, so next up, in just another example of just why I fucking hate the Star Wars fandom, there is a group that is getting together and wanting to pay $200 million so they can remake the Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yep.
You know what? They can go suck a bag of dicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have a Twitter account called @RM The Last Jedi, Remake The Last Jedi. There were definitely some interesting responses. Seth Rogen saw this and started tweeting at them, saying things like, "Yo, I'm very confused as to what your goal is here. You literally want to spend $200 million remaking The Last Jedi? Someone has given you that money? I don't get it." And they responded, "Not just spend, invest. Good ROI. Then Rian Johnson retweeted this, saying, "Please, please, 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 please actually happen. Please, 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 please." He wants to see it burned.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a bunch of people are like, "All right, I'll see if those angry lads pay to get The Last Jedi remade. I will personally pony up the $250 million to have it remade back to the way it was." Okay, how about this? They pay for The Last Jedi remake, and it's exactly the same, but all the actors have to make their own laser and the lightsaber noise. I've been thinking about this more. I would actually support The Last Jedi remake where everything was exactly the same, except all the characters were explicitly bisexual. Another person said, "Things I will fix in The Last Jedi. 1. Leia and Holdo kiss. 2. Luke equals more crotchety. 3. Kylo Ren and Rey sing a funny duet about becoming friends in their mind link set to a montage of Rey pissing off the nuns. 4. Kylo Ren actually never wears a shirt now and is wider every scene. 5. I'm actually going to lean into Creep Poe and just make him a PUA that everyone hates. 6. Give John Boyega a puppy. 7. Extended scene with Rose reading her real person fic she wrote about the last movie. 8. I don't know. The porks could have hats, I guess. 9. That's, in fact, thinking about it, the entire movie should be a musical.
Let's be real here. This is not happening.
Oh, it's not. No. It's just parts of the Star Wars fan base being a little dill holes.
Yeah,
not as they usually are.
Characters should be able to grow and change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they haven't explicitly, you know, written a ton of fiction over those 30 years between 6 and 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Plus Disney, you know, just made The Last Jedi. I don't think they need to remake it.
Yeah, and they also still hold the copyright, so... Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, they're gonna pay them.
They could pay them, but they're not gonna take their money.
Yeah. All right, well...
$200 million for Disney is like, yeah, whatever.
No, hey. They already paid that money, and we got $1 billion plus back.
Yeah.
We're okay.
Yeah. So next up, and this is something that people have been talking about pretty much ever since the show was canceled. The reboot of Roseanne that, of course, did okay and then crashed and burned after people realized how batshit insane Roseanne Barr is.
It was not a secret at all.
No.
She has a long history of that.
Yeah, so they've decided they're going to reboot it and they're going to call it The Conners. And Roseanne will not be a part of it. And it's basically just their way of sort of doing right by the cast and crew.
Yeah.
You know, even if the show doesn't really... Yeah, even if the show doesn't really do that well, you know, it's just a chance to help.
Yeah, let them do it, see where it goes.
Yeah.
You never know, it might go somewhere.
It might actually be better.
Yeah, even Roseanne is being cordial about this. Said, "I regret the circumstances that have caused me to be removed from Roseanne. I agreed to the settlement in order that 200 jobs of beloved cast and crew could be saved, and I wish the best for everyone involved."
Mm, yeah, she didn't write that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But still.
whatever. Anyway. So next up, we now know that there's going to be a musical coming to Broadway in 2020 about the life and music of Michael Jackson.
And you'll never be able to go see it.
Nope.
Yep.
Yeah. Unless you're super, super lucky.
Yeah, I was looking at Hamilton tickets for up here in Cleveland. They just released a new block of them. It's like $450.
Yeah.
Okay. Nope.
It's like,
I think I found some that were like $200, and I'm like, no.
Yeah. Just,
sometimes you get lucky and you can, like, if you actually just show up there. But yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I'm not driving 2 hours just to, on the off chance the tickets open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh boy. Wonder if they're gonna bring up that.
Oh, they might bring up that.
They'll kind of have to bring up that because...
Yeah, it kind of, put a big mark on his career.
Yeah, it totally did.
Regardless of whether it was true or not.
Uh-huh. Which, by the way, at least as far as the first accusation is, we kind of found out it wasn't.
Hmm.
Basically, they got the kid's dad on tape basically admitting that he was doing this to try and milk Michael Jackson for all he was worth financially. Now, as for the other ones, that's up for debate. But
yeah,
a lot of people tried to take advantage of him.
So, all right.
Even
so,
as a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And also, I found out that some of those rumors or crazy accusations about him actually kind of turned out to be true. Like, for example, the whole thing about him having that skin disease that was slowly turning his skin white, actually turned out to be real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's the reason why he started wearing the glove, because apparently that's where the spots
first started showing
up. Yeah. Also, we also found out why his voice was so high-pitched. It's because when he was a teenager and he started going through puberty, and what's one of the things that happens when a kid starts going through puberty?
Your voice changes.
Well, not just your voice, but, like, skin-related.
Yeah.
Acne. Mm-hmm. Well, his dad gave him this experimental medication that, for all intents and purposes, basically ended up chemically castrating him.
Nice.
Yeah. But, so yeah,
his dad was
George Jackson is a piece of garbage. He really is. But, anyway, moving on from there. So, Amazon, of course, now is getting into the online streaming television service, and, they've recently ordered an animated series that's going to be based on Robert Kirkman's Invisible. Invincible. Invincible is a very different thing. So Robert Kirkman's Invincible comic, which, by the way, if you ever get a chance, read it. It's amazing. But
yep. Yeah, so it's going to be 8-hour-long episodes for the first season.
Wow, that's animated too? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big commitment.
I think that's actually, like, straight up, that might be a first.
Mm.
Like,
Well, I guess it really depends on the quality of the animation.
That's true.
Yeah. But still, I'm really liking Amazon's commitment to genre fiction here.
Yeah.
They seem to be doing a lot of very good stuff in this genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's see. This is going to be produced by his Skybound Banner.
Mm-hmm.
They got Simon Rachapa, who worked on Teen Titans, is the showrunner for this.
The original Teen Titans, by the way, not Teen Titans Go.
No,
very big difference.
Yeah.
So if that's what he ends up doing, then yeah, it's definitely going to be good.
Mm.
Damn, I legit can't wait to see that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Have they given, like, any time frame or anything, or...?
Doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't expect it, but
yeah.
I could have
asked.
Amazon
has announced a lot of shows that they haven't actually given time frames for, so
yeah.
This is not new for them.
Yeah, so, this is great. Now, you know, if Jeff Bezos could only, you know, nut up and start paying his factory workers what they deserve...
Yeah, it might be nice.
Yeah, I mean, you are the world's first trillionaire, jackass.
Hmm.
You can afford it, but... Anyway, and finally, last story for the night, we got our first trailer for Creed 2.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this looks pretty good. This has Creed facing off against Drago's son.
Oh, man.
I love how they're just making the same movies again.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's him sort of going up against his father's legacy.
The guy who killed him, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the son of the guy who killed him.
Yeah.
So that actually brings up, is the guy who played Drago, is he going to be...
Yeah, that's mentioned here, Dolph Lundgren's on the cast list.
Oh, wow. That's legit kind of cool.
Yeah.
By the way, how many of you guys have seen... That was Rocky 3, wasn't it?
4.
It was Rocky 4?
Yeah, 3 was the Clubber Lang.
Yeah, 3 was Clubber Lang. Okay. How many of you guys have seen that movie recently? Because you guys remember how that part of the movie goes down, right? Drago is basically like he's in a... And well, it was basically supposed to be like an exhibition match, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so he's up against Apollo Creed. And you remember how Apollo Creed made his entrance? It was like this Vegas style.
Living in America?
Yeah, with James Brown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I'm like, yeah, you know, after that, I can kind of understand why Ivan Drago beat the crap out of him. yeah, it's, let's see how it's going to do. Should be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first Creed movie was actually very good, yeah. So I have hopes for this.
Yeah, I got to give them credit for keeping, you know, Rocky actually relevant by finding a way to sort of hand off the torch to another character like that.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, this whole series from Rocky to Creed 2, mm-hmm. is the quality for the most part is very high. Like Rocky 5 is not great, but otherwise every other one there you could say is at least good.
Rocky 4 was batshit crazy. There was a robot.
Yeah. Yeah, a fuck robot.
Yeah.
You know, his brother
Happy
got...
Happy birthday, Molly.
Yeah. You know, he got lonely. He fucked
All right.
Yeah, it's
kind of
crazy. A boxing movie series franchise, for the most part, was really good.
Yeah.
Especially being written by Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, Stallone pretty much wrote that entire series.
Yeah.
And he directed a couple of them, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did the first one. I forget the other ones he directed.
The last one.
Yeah.
So, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, I guess. Well, anyway. So, that was the last story of the night. So, I would like to remind all of our listeners, now that we've had ourselves a show, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com, just in case, you know, you got a message you want to send in, something you want us to read on the air, your insane political manifesto, you know, that kind of thing. You can reach us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little gaggle of giggliness at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, archive.org, RSS. I usually have to kind of take a deep breath before I list all of those. Basically, anywhere where unscripted shenanigans that are put into a microphone like ours can be sold for your delicious mouth ears. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. This has been Let's Weekend, and for Filippo Donalfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi, good night, sleep tight, and remember the ear mouths do bite, so you might want to wear ear mugs. Good night, folks.